When the Office of Management and Budget issues its sequestration order to federal agencies, the military will begin to take additional actions to conserve cash for the rest of the year, particularly in their operation and maintenance accounts. Preparation for wide-ranging civilian furloughs, more curtailment of military training, a close examination of contracts for possible terminations or modifications. But for most of those steps, the actual impacts will show up as lagging indicators, and they won't be apparent until long after the deadline for the next fiscal showdown, the March 27th expiration of the 2013 continuing resolution. Major General Karen Dyson is the director of the Army's Budget Office.
One thing to understand is that it's not something that's going to happen that's going to be a big explosive event on the 1st of March. It's more like getting on a treadmill. And as we get on this treadmill, we sort of start off a little slow. We got on the treadmill in December, and we started our planning, and it's been picking up steam and picking up steam. And as this treadmill starts to pick up steam, it's going to really start to impact most widely in April, I would say, because that's when we're looking at the furlough, which is the one tool that we really do not want to use, but that would be the first date that would be implemented for our furlough. So by about Memorial Day, you would see our civilian workforce very much impacted. By Memorial Day, we'll know what summer training cannot happen.
Training and civilian salaries are just two of the areas covered by the Army's operation and maintenance accounts, which will take a more severe hit than those of any other service. Because of a perfect storm of budget pressure on those funding lines in 2013, including sequestration, a budget that was copied and pasted by Congress from the year before and is now mismatched with real-time needs, and unexpected costs in Afghanistan, the Army will have $18 billion less in budget authority than it planned for by the end of this year. It intends to protect the war effort in Afghanistan from cuts, as well as wounded warrior programs and the most critical family and soldier programs. That leaves only about half the O&M budget available in which to find those reductions.
So when you hear that sequestration impacts everyone evenly at about 9% across the budget, that doesn't apply in the case of our operation and maintenance account. The compounding effect of this is really about 52% against our unprotected amounts for operation and maintenance. Now, that's if we were to spread it across the entire year. But we're going to be potentially starting this on the 1st of March, this Friday, which means we only have 7 months left to execute the reduction. And we also only have $20 billion left in our unprotected accounts. So now you have a reduction of $18 billion taken against $20 billion. This is why we say this is a devastating environment that we're operating within.
With only $1 to $2 billion to spread around for the remainder of the year, the Army will start making additional cutbacks when it gets the sequestration order. Around 78% of all soldiers will have training cutback. Only the next group to head to Afghanistan will be fully funded. Brigadier General Kurt Rohat, the Director of Resource Management for the Army's Installation Management Command, says funding for domestic military bases will be cut by 30%. He says the Army doesn't believe it will be able to fully pay for even the most critical safety of life programs in military bases. And only about 37% of facility sustainment and repair needs will be funded.
As we speak right now, there is no funding for any restoration or modernization. That means that a soldier working in a facility or a soldier living in a barracks that has a leaky roof, we may not be able to repair that roof. So, you know, we may have to just throw a tarp over it. Or say a window is broken. We may not be able to replace that window. We may have to provide a piece of plywood. Or if a water main breaks, we may have to direct that soldier to leave his barracks and take a shower in some other barracks. So it is a concern of not having the funding for restoration and modernization, or even enough funding to sustain the facilities that we have currently out there.
Under sequestration, military personnel accounts that pay the salaries of uniformed service members are exempt from cuts. But besides leaky roofs and training shortfalls, the Army says there will be other significant impacts to military members under sequestration, including, Rohat says, some potentially major changes to the jobs many of them do every day. With DOD's civilian employees being furloughed for one day a week and service contractors almost certain to take a big hit, uniformed members may well have to fill those labor gaps. He says the Army's in the process of reviewing about $400 million worth of service contracts for potential cancellation.
What services can soldiers really do? Do we want our soldiers to be doing refuge removal, you know, trying to find a tactical vehicle to pull the Dempsey dumpsters off post and take it out to a landfill? Do we want them to be riding around on lawn mowers and cutting grass? Do we want them to do custodial services? I would tell you that I think we'd rather have them you know, flying helicopters, doing live fire exercises out on the ranges. Every dollar that we don't put toward service contracts, that is soldiers now doing that type of work. And that's a real impact to readiness.
While the Army says it will protect soldier and family programs as much as possible, services like child care centers and commissaries are likely to see reduced operating hours. The other military services are predicting similar outcomes. General Mark Welsh, the Air Force Chief of Staff, told Congress earlier this week that's not just because funding for military base operations will be cut. It's also a result of the planned one-day-a-week furlough for almost all of DOD's 780,000 civilians.
The problem we have right now, at every installation, our commanders are looking in all the services at how we mitigate the impact of these things and how we preserve the services programs, the family readiness programs, the child care support, all the things that are so important to our people. The problem is that 31.5 million man-hours of furloughed workforce is awfully tough to mitigate. That's where we need help. We can't control that. The other thing I'd mention is that that workforce that we're furloughing is someone else we should be keeping faith with. They haven't had pay raises over the last 3 years, and now we're going to take 20% of their pay for the rest of the fiscal year. For the Air Force, this is a pretty incredibly important part of what we do, not just in the active component, but in the Guard and the Reserve. A huge part of the Reserve component is a civilian workforce or dual status technicians.
And Welsh says there are plenty of areas in which the civilian cutbacks will impair day-to-day military capability.
In the Air Force, 40% of our cyber workforce are civilians. And so the furloughs affect our capability in that area beginning the first day.
The chiefs of each of the military services told the House Appropriations Committee this week that in many areas of the military budget, the abrupt cuts would not, in fact, save taxpayers money. Deferred maintenance, they say, will lead to more costly emergency repairs on ships, buildings, and airplanes next year and beyond. That's also true, Welsh says, with respect to the training cutbacks that are about to begin across the services.
And so our combat air forces, our fighter and our bomber aircraft that are not involved in the nuclear mission, will slow down their training starting in March. They'll maintain just basic proficiency in takeoffs and landings as long as we can stretch the money out. But their combat capability, all the different things that they do to be ready for a multi-spectrum conflict, will erode beginning in March. And by 60 days later, for most of our pilots, the pilots themselves will be not mission ready. And by July, the unit itself, all the pilots in it, will be not mission ready. To recover, when we start the next fiscal year, assuming we have the right amount of flying hours for a normal year to keep those pilots continuously ready, that's not going to be enough to recover their readiness. So we'll need more flying hours next year to bring them back up to speed, which will take more training, more demands from instructor and evaluator time. It will take about 6 months to return the force to readiness, and it will have cost some increment, we are working that number now, above what we already have in the program for flying hours for next year.
General Jim Amos, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, says the shortfall in training funds is the biggest concern for his service at the moment. But a close second is the constant preparation for short-term budget crises and the inability to do long-term planning.
Internally, almost spiritually, is the problem of uncertainty inside the Marine Corps. The uncertainty with my civilian Marines. It's a 20% pay cut. You know, I've got 20,000 civilian Marines who come to work every single day, as John Granard said, have been faithful employees. They're not sure what's going to, they don't, you know, they'd probably be okay if they just knew that it was going to end at the end of this year. They don't have any idea what's going to happen next year. So it's not just them. It's my young enlisted Marines that are wondering, hey, sir, is there going to be a Marine Corps for me to be able to be a part of over the next 5 years, 10 years, you know, 20 years. And then my officer corps is exactly the same way. Is there going to be room for me? Am I going to be competitive? Am I going to be able to stay in this organization that I've dedicated two or three combat deployments to? So uncertainty is kind of the spiritual thing that runs through the Corps that is probably my greatest problem.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.